We developed that huge binder. And then when we had to, the state required us to redo it, you know, nobody could tell you what was in that strategic plan because it was not used. To me, I am so thrilled to hear, you know, when LEA reports to us, they talk about the flagship plan. When teachers are doing it, our administration is, you know, at the middle school, when they do their academy, it's about the flagship plan. And so I am just so thrilled to be part of an organization, and Frank and our district administrators are such a part of this. We helped come up with the mission, and then we were able to come up with the flagship plan, and it's research-based, and it's stayed afloat because we haven't just put it on a shelf. And I think we're starting to see the differences. I'm excited to look at when we get the kids from Hillcrest down to Adams. What's going to happen then as the school is bigger? I'm hoping we will have the same buy-in from the other teachers, and we're going to be able to see some really great things going on there still, and that could spread throughout our other schools and take care of some of the discouragement because of some of these other things. One thing I noted, nobody said poverty. Is diversity the challenge, or is it poverty that's the challenge, or are they one and the same?
I don't know. I think what that is a reflection of is our principals have gotten to a place, are at a place where they say, this just is. These are students.
Yeah, our socioeconomic level.
Our principals and a very large number of our teachers are at a place where they are saying this stuff doesn't matter. We're not going to worry about it. A student comes to our classroom. Our role is find out how to serve that kid in our classroom.
Even if they won't be here in 6 months.
Doesn't matter how long they're going to be here or what baggage they come with us or they bring with them. Yeah, we're going to find ways to address that. But our job is find a way to help that student learn.
It's not a changing demographic like it was 15 years ago. You know, we've been dealing with poverty for a really, really long time, so it's not the first time we're grappling with it. And so when we first started to grapple with it, it would have made it to the board. Mm-hmm. But now it's a part of who we are, and there is more acceptance for it, and I think there is also more confidence in dealing with that. In my mind, you know, our ethnic diversity is currently what poverty once was. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing more of that and still having some uncertainty about what and how to do that. And I think that's a reflection of both change and growth as a district.
So going back to your question, Greg, and tying into a little bit what Ann said, as a district, I mean, one of our conversations with our principals yesterday in our workshop with them was how we maintain focus on the essentials when you arrive at the office, you get 100 different things from different directions that have the potential to get you off course. And we gave some very specific structures that Jed and Daryl are going to be using with the principals this year to help maintain that. I think for us as a superintendency, as Jeff and as the board, I do think a lot of it comes down to what do we talk about? You know, what do we talk about in our board meetings? And that's something, you know, I can do more of when I'm doing my superintendent reports every month, reporting on something from these priorities. You know, talking about some student achievement data every time we have student achievement data. And maybe working with the principals more to get, you know, hey, anytime you've got something to celebrate from your CFAs, you know, your common assessments that your teams are doing, please pass that on so we can share that with the board. So, A, the community sees that this is something that the board values and is going to keep talking about, so it doesn't get put on a shelf. And secondly, for the board, it's a constant reminder of, yep, these are the things that we are prioritizing. I think that's one big way to do it, is just make sure that's what we're talking about regularly.
It's a continual focus.
Mm-hmm.
And communicate it.
Right, and that's not to ignore the other things that we have to also address as a board, the other issues we need to talk about. But that becomes the thing that we talk about. And as you look at as we go to NSBA and listen to the research on highly effective boards, I mean, that is one recurring theme. Student achievement is the thing that is always talked about. All the other things, we talk about them as needed, but student achievement is always talked about.
And how those other things impact our student achievement. Mm-hmm. The student achievements are the forefront, they're on the front row.
So that could be something that we work on with board leadership. Yeah. You know, what do we do to make sure that there's something on every board meeting agenda that is talking about our identified priorities, or even, you know, our student achievement? Just what can we put on this agenda to talk about this and celebrate what is happening and identify where we are?
And I think we can link that with our finances too. When we discuss the finances, are we putting our money where our values, and, you know, is it in professional development? Is it in the social emotional learning, like we talked earlier this morning? How are we finding, you know, the money to keep our teachers, retain our teachers? Some of those things that if we can apply it back to the plan and our goals, and always talk about those goals. But I think having some specific goals this year that we're working on, and we review with, I don't know whether it's quarterly or every 6 months, whatever we come up with today, that we actually look at it instead of, oh, I've got a board president, I need to find the goals we set last year. What were they? You know, we want to have our goals forefront as well.
And when you say, you know, using that as an element even to carry over into financial discussions, I just really think that's possibly an element that should be driving every aspect of board meeting. Mm-hmm. So whether that's we want to have a discussion about student achievement, you want to, when we get to finance, to say, does that align? But even something like public comment, you know, that you're in a really precarious situation to be responsive to public and to be mindful of their concerns. And not always is every comment or concern aligned with student achievement, as it is more aligned with a special interest, an individual person's special interest. So then if, as a board, you're making a commitment to administration as a whole to say, now we've taken this and this is where we're going to go, we're going to keep a focus on student achievement, some thought and discussion about what will that look like when the public comment puts you in a position of, okay, well, that might, based on additional information we have, might not support the student achievement. So looking at student achievement not only as a discussion point, but a criteria. Mm-hmm. And not only in the proactive, preventative, positive PR aspects, but also in the troubleshooting, problem-solving, problem-resolution aspect, too.
So with the administrators, Frank, how do we as a board understand what our academic goals or changes are going to be to change where our status is currently, to increase our graduation rates, show better academic prowess? Because I don't know that we as a board completely understand on the academic side why this is happening or what's going to happen over the next year, what have you. So if we get that very question, you know, it's going to be a blanket, well, we have a plan. But you know, we don't really know what the plan is, for example, going into this next year. What are we going to change? What are we going to do differently to move those expectations? How do we understand that better as a board, that discussion
I think that would be a great topic for our work sessions.
Yeah,
I think that would be fantastic for us to sit down and have that time to just talk about this is what we're doing instructionally and in terms of interventions and our tiered response system to increase academic achievement for all students. So you don't just have to, you're not just relying on, okay, well, there's a plan for it, but yeah, we're doing this and schools are doing this and they're focusing on this. And there's, I mean, that's probably a more than one work session conversation.
But it could be certain grades.
If we started with that, I think that would be a great use of those work sessions.
I do too. And I think we start with, where do we want to be? This is what we're trying to get to. What are we doing to get there? And then how are we measuring that and review that periodically?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to, we have to adjust resources or we have to adjust tactical, you guys, what you're doing, we can do that. But I'm with you. I mean, yeah, we got a plan. We want to increase graduation rate. Well, that's one thing. How else do we measure that student achievement?
As I said, I think that's really critical because we're trying to, as much as we can in our professional learning, professional development with our teams and teachers and our admins, is to move away from what may have been kind of a traditional approach to professional development where we just sat and listened.
Yeah.
Because we know that the retainment and the implementation in the classroom is basically zero. 0 to 5% is what most research shows. So in that, we're going to be asking, we already have been, that something comes out of that that I can implement in my classroom. But what that means, and Ken kind of brought this up, is that, well, I'm a teacher who's taught for 25 years and I have a practice that I've been utilizing. Most likely, I'm going to have to replace a practice.
I can't just
keep adding on. And so as a board and as directors, as we understand that and see what that looks like, I think we can have that better context of supporting our principals in the implementation of those practices, where it's not just seen as extra work. You know, my principal's asking me to just do more work. Well, the principal's not asking to do more work. We're asking to implement and try out the practices we're learning about. Now, it will be more work if we don't find something that's not as effective to replace, because then it just adds one more thing to my plate. And so I think as we see the whole context of this, I think the conversation of understanding what it is, I think all of us then are able to better, even more support our admins and our teachers to implement those practices, because it's going to come down to implementation. We're getting to the point we've got to move past the talking piece and say, now we've got to put it into practice. We've got to see it happen in a classroom.
I'm wondering if it would be appropriate for an invitation to the board, so we know when there are professional development days, so that we can join in, especially when it's a large group, and you know, be able to see what is being taught so that we perhaps understand it. Some of us are more retired than others, and would have that opportunity, if we were invited, to come minimally participate with, you know, when it's appropriate, but see what's happening so we understand what is being asked, changes to be made, so that when a teacher has a comment, we can either join in the celebration or explain why that's important to do.
I'd like to also suggest more of an understanding on how we're working with diversity, with the sensitivity of how not to separate. I mean, we heard that over and over this morning just in our discussion talking about different labels, if you will, brown community, whatever we want to talk about. But if our schools are becoming a third minority, we had an example down at Bridgeland where I think based on the percent of the community, we were trying to understand better what percent of the Latino population we have coming to Bridgeland, and we are actually higher than the percent of the community at large, which we were real excited about. But what we haven't been able to crack is getting more students, and it wasn't until within the last 3 months that we found out that Latino parents think that a scholarship is a loan that has to be repaid. So we've been pushing and pushing that we're gonna pay for your schooling. We've got opportunities, and we can't get them to come. We can't get them to go to school for free. And a large part, culturally, turned out to be that we didn't understand. It was almost like Larry's. I'm shocked that you would approach me.
Well, yeah, he was.
Latino night. So I don't know what our success looks like with that population if we were able to evaluate it currently. But clearly, that's got to be a huge part of getting our graduation rates up and our student success and student achievement up. How do we focus on that within the pie? And again, Daryl, like you mentioned, how do we have teacher adjustment for this community as part of that? You probably can't say, hey, we're going to talk about that with the Latino population today. But clearly, that's infiltrated throughout our K-12.
Just a quick update of things that are being done. This last year, at the elementary level, and it started to spill a little bit over into secondary, but the elementary level, there's a very strong focus on strategies that help our English learning students be more successful in the classroom. And that has started to bleed over into secondary conversations as well. We started, when teachers are working in their professional learning communities, the ideas we're getting better at identifying individual students by individual standards of who is succeeding, who is not, and then targeting those interventions. The things that you mentioned about, parents, for example, thinking, having a misunderstanding of what a scholarship is, those, I think, we haven't explicitly addressed that. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because that's something that, as we do our Latino Education Fair that we've done at Logan High for the last few years, that's something we can explicitly, address, and we can continue to work with our clubs. The state board is going to require us to do professional learning for all staff on diversity, equity, and inclusion. They're going to develop, the state board will develop a framework for that, and then we'll be required to develop professional learning materials that the board will have to sign off on. And that will, part of that will be these discussions of what do you do as a classroom teacher to understand that these students are bringing different sets of needs to your class, and how to appropriately accommodate for them. Exactly.
Be willing to talk one-on-one with you and develop that relationship.
And the inclusion part, Larry's experience talking with the parent. I know I sat with the Latinos in Action officers, and one of my granddaughter, who goes to Mountain Crest, one of the girls is in her neighborhood and they go to church together. So she's from Mountain Crest going to Logan, and she will be next year's president. And we had that connection with my granddaughter, and pretty soon I'm talking with all these girls, and it was just fun for me because I had a connection with her. And I think one of the things the board can do for inclusion is that we don't just go sit at whatever it is with the people we know or the people who look like us or worship with us, or that we find we're inclusive of other people, and we are not very reflective of our community. And I think if we can reach out to the rest of our community, that's something that the board can do that increases that inclusiveness and also the leadership for students and teachers, showing that we appreciate that diversity.
Well, to me, that's where Logan High has an incredible opportunity to really crack that nut, if you will. I mean, Utah State has a similar mandate, right, with mm-hmm. diversity, inclusion, whatever. Their Latino population is less than 1%. So they're not cracking the nut at the higher education level at four-year institutions, which is coming up through the high schools, have them prepared to go to move on to post-secondary. So if Logan City could be the model for that kind of success. I think that's one of our huge opportunities. We can't change that, right? I mean, nor do we want to, but we want to have the most updated technique and skill level and ability all through our leadership and teachers and everything to help that be a successful part of our student achievement as well. That's just a tough one for me over the last decade, because I've been in Utah State trying to solve that, ISU trying to solve that, and now Bridgeland trying to solve it. How do we get more success out of our diverse population? And some of it comes back to that very thing you talked about with, do they think they can be successful?
Well, the ideas are still, they're still in our flagship plan. They're still there. So it's that effective instruction with every single student.
Yeah, regardless.
It's no matter what. Like, you think about one of the items in there is, you know, frequent opportunities to respond. If you follow around, say, an EL student in a typical school around the country, I can't remember the research out of that EL book showed that an average EL student spends about 8 minutes of their day,
2%.
Or 2% of their day, utilizing academic language and talking. Well, that's a shame, right? So we've got to figure out, so the ideas are already in there. Mm-hmm. We just got to help them to get into the classroom and be utilized by every teacher across, and then build that idea that we can do it. And how do you build motivation with the kid as they have success? When they have success, they get more motivated. And then you tie it into, here's all your opportunities in the future. USU, four-year university, BTEC, all these opportunities for you. But that can only happen if I'm being successful in the classroom at the same time, combining both.
Follow-up to Daryl, when he said, you take the flagship round and get it in, get it in every classroom. Probably what we see is in classrooms where it's being used with children regardless of national origin or minority status. And when you find a student of another ethnic status, go into their classroom, and it's probably not happening for anyone. So it's probably more about teachers, and if they are or are using it, not that teachers are using it for one population of kids and not using it for another population of kids, and therefore, it really isn't about the child's cultural background and what they can or can't do or access or don't access because of that cultural background, probably comes right back to whether or not teachers are using it. Because if they are, they're providing it to all. They won't say, I'll give this to you, but I won't give it to you. If they're using it, they're providing it to
all. I don't think there's any question that that's the ideal world. I mean, we're limited, right? What our teachers can do in a classroom, because they can't separate out for two or three versus the whole class or during five or what have you. But my worry, Frank, you have a background with it, is that there is a cultural difference that does prevent some of that from going to the top. And it's a subset where we'd like to say they're included in the flagship plan, so everything's going to be okay. I just don't believe that is really going to be the case based on what we know about culture. Because if we can't change that culture, then we've got some different issues, and it might not be possible to.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we've tried to give away scholarships at Bridgerland where the parents are just saying flat out, you know, you're not going to go past high school, and yet we've got, you know, fifth grade students who don't end up successfully graduating from high school, even though they have the talent and the ability to do that and have a teacher that's sending that message. So I don't know what the answer is. I'm just saying that I think there's a uniqueness within the flagship plan that is critical for every student, no question. But we're talking about community, we're talking about tribes, we're talking about, you know, the Latino in action community that creates a safety point, feeling at home, and some better achievement, I bet, for those students that are in that club.
I liked our discussion earlier this morning about adding that social emotional piece to the flagship plan.
Yeah.
And what our experts who were with us this morning talked about was the need for students to feel a sense of community and trust and belonging. And again, that's if you call on a student, if you, you know, and if we're, so I think that's part of the piece. If you in elementary school know you have trusted adults you can go to, and they tell you you're great and you're going to achieve, and why don't you go out for the soccer team or whatever, I think adding that social emotional piece may be what your do for what you're talking about,
I think,
Frank.
That's what we heard from Chris and Richard is a prime example of what he's trying to accomplish, what he's trying to do, and he's got that population there, right?
So I think
we don't have that at every school.
Yeah, so if we add that piece to the flagship plan, I think it will make the flagship plan even stronger, because then it will deal with the aspect you're talking about.
I agree. I think that is a key point.
It goes back to the implementation of the flagship plan and the best practices to implement it. You know, best practices, like Suzanne pointed out, works for this ethnic group, it's going to work for the other. Mm-hmm. Best practices are best practices.
Well, and I think, as I think about more about what you're saying, Frank, I hear two separate sets of needs that we have to address. One is, and you refer to this explicitly, one is the development of the skills that will allow a student to be successful in post-secondary education, whether BTEC or USU. And that's the part that the flagship plan explicitly addresses. The part that the flagship plan doesn't explicitly address is what you're referencing is parent perception of opportunity, parent awareness of opportunity, and whether that's whether this is a relevant opportunity or whether it's an accessible opportunity for my child. That's something separate. As you were talking, it reminded me, if you've seen the movie Stand and Deliver, there's this one girl who no longer is able to come to the afternoon math study sessions because she has to work in her family's restaurant. So Jaime Escalante goes and he gets in a confrontation with the dad because, you know, dad's saying, look, she works here and we take care of we do this as a family, and, you know, there's some angry words back and forth, and, you know, eventually the girl ends up coming back to the math classes. But there are those two sets of needs. And I think our flagship plan and what we're doing with our PD, what we're doing in our instruction, will address the skill side of it. The reason why we do things like the Latino Education Fair is exactly to try to address the other piece of it that you've mentioned. And I think that's something that we're making progress, but the nut has not been cracked yet.
Yeah.
You know, to go back to that, I think we gotta keep building.
But the mental wellness part of it is going to help us because it is really about tribes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you use that community term with Sebastian Unger and talking about tribe, that's how we all exist through high school. We have an athletic tribe, or we have an academic, you know, the foreign language. That becomes part of our tribe that we identify with and where we feel most comfortable. But the students that have the most difficulty with the mental act, or components of that, don't have a club. They walk around and feel somewhat lonely, but it doesn't get out to a teacher, perhaps, or isn't recognized by their peers as, I don't really fit in any of these clubs. I don't fit into this tribe. So I go around and do something. That's the trick with mental illness, is because every time there's a suicide, like we mentioned before, that the parents, the peers, the friends, nobody saw it coming. Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest part, I think, about that. So if we can create like this culture, I guess, where the acceptance is for every student somehow fitting into a tribe where they're comfortable, whether that's a teacher relationship, the peers, what have you. To me, that's one of our biggest challenges. And that's growing within Logan City School District uniquely.
Shannon, did you have something you wanted to add?
Two things. First, Rachel apologizes for the interruption. she did not get drink orders. She got the restaurant wanting to know what people want for drinks, so I don't know if we want to pass her out a picture. And I can send her a picture.
You tell her we'll just get a drink.
Second, we're on track.
Drinks.
Oh,
drink orders.
Second item is, I think that in talking about this social emotional health, I think it comes down to the relationships. And I really think we're making headway there. You brought in experts that talked about it this morning. If we can tap into what they're doing and the successes that they are having, that provides those leadership responsibilities for those individuals. So you're just kind of hitting all of that, because the scholarships that were awarded to so many diverse different groups this year was amazing. To stand there or sit there for a half an hour to have them read all of the students who were awarded pathway completions was amazing this year. So I think we can tap into those strengths. Just even foundation scholarships. We had over 10% of the student body at Logan High School apply for one of those scholarships, and over half of them went to a minority. So
that's awesome.
I think we're making headway, and we need to tap into those successes to then build more successes. So.
That's great. So 10% of our senior class applied for
a
foundation scholarship.
Over 10%. We had.
That's great.
Over 45 applicants.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
So, and I just looked, half of them went to minority students who are either attending a variety of different higher education. They have a variety of different aspirations. Some of them are attending BTEC, the University of Utah, Dixie. There's a student going to Chicago. So
that might be. You know, as we start to draw to this time point in our agenda, what if that were the board's focus? A is to make sure that we are regularly talking about student achievement in our meetings. So that's our primary focus, and that the board is continuing to work with the district administration on adding that mental health piece to the flagship plan. You know, building off today's discussion. I mean, if we have those two steps from the board, those are things that we can follow up on consistently, we can talk about them consistently, and at the end of the year, we'll be able to identify, you know, where progress was made, you know, what work remains to be done. You know, without adding too many things to the agendas that already have to be addressed.
Sounds good.
I've been thinking about the raising for that opportunities one.
Mm-hmm.
What if we switch that up to something about collective teacher advocacy? Because that's what we know. That's what's really getting at.
Yeah, that's what I put parentheses. So I just haven't phrased it right.
Yeah. Strengthen every employee. Strengthen collective teacher advocacy. Because that then there's a perfect connection with the whole thing all the way across. Mm-hmm.
So strengthen collective teacher advocacy across the district.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
I like the idea of trying to recognize teachers more often. So Shannon, if you could give away a car every month. Just on the website, I don't know how we usually blast out information, what have you, but just watching for, you know, that's what we're trying to do as a board, right? We watch for a uniqueness mm-hmm. that we can celebrate, and that's what we talk about at board meetings.
So we just do top banana awards like Melissa does, but we pretend it's a car.
Yeah.
If we were giving away a car this month, we would give it to this person.
We already have the opportunities. You can just drive the Traverse for 2 months until you resell them.
There you go. We say this teacher of the month gets to use the district vehicle for
The damage is on you.
One month.
Just don't take it home.
I am excited to be back in regular session when we can actually have them come and recognize them, especially if we've got to broadcast it. But I think there's a difference when we're sitting next to each other. There really is. And I just appreciate being together. And I think as we have teachers come and we recognize them, especially if they're part of the discussions of, you know, this, we're talking about how we're improving student achievement at a school, if we can include an instructional coach and a teacher who can talk about how that's helped in their school. I think some of those things would help us also recognize teachers and others who are making a difference with our students.
Absolutely.
And we let them know it's, yes, we enjoy meeting our coaches, but we also enjoy meeting our second grade teacher who's really making a difference.
I would agree with that, but I like the option that you are going to choose to continue broadcasting those, because our viewership has gone up. I mean, not tremendously, but when there's important topics, it goes up, and so accurate information is being shared, and it's even being picked up by media outlets in Salt Lake. We've got places that will watch board meetings after they've been posted and call with questions about
Tell me about it.
It's a lot of pressure on us for what's being said in board meetings, but I think the pros outweigh the cons.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of good things out of it.
Well, those would be great. I mean, those align with the things that the principals have helped us identify as priorities, the things we've discussed as administration. We will talk some more about, you know, marketing tomorrow and public perception, so we'll dig into that some more. But I think those are the keys: strengthening student achievement, strengthening student mental well-being, and then communicating those priorities and those successes consistently are going to be the biggest things that we can do to address enrollment and address student success. I think those would be great. On that note, thank you as board members for not doing anything that gets you sent to jail or removed from the board or anything like that.
Or just have our board conduct in every newspaper in the States.
Events like that make me extremely grateful for you all. So thank you.
Make sure you stay legal.
So if there's nothing else there, maybe we take a stretch break, and then Rachel will be coming back with food, I imagine, in just a couple minutes. She just texted you.
She was asking about drinks, so we can get everyone a quarter, and they can go up and grab a drink.
We have a special cake.
And there's the special fridge.
There's only 20 cents in there.
We'll go to the special fridge.
It was 45 cents at Ellis the other day when I went in there. 7.25.